me invite Brian to write the agenda for this meeting. Yes. My apologies, is the Secretary for Defense. She wanted to know what our expectation on item number five. I've told him that it's a committee report arising from the budget vote discussion that we'll be considering and adopting for a submission to Parliament. So they have no specific role. All right, colleagues, so these are the items for today. Let me welcome all of you and declare the meeting open. But before I could confirm that, Brian, do we have the quorum?
Yes, it is.
Brian?
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir. Are we correct?
Not yet.
Not yet. You're saying not yet?
Not yet, sir. Morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
I have just admitted we now...
We now have a quorum.
That's correct, sir.
Oh, it's Mr. Mafanya that was robbing us of the quorum.
Believe so, sir. No, not at all. Not at all, sir. I think you had bad dreams, eh? Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Mafanya. Colleagues, let's
start. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much and welcome, sir. Thanks. We will start with the briefing on the military police mandate capacity, staffing and resources, achievements and challenges, including the caseload. It is the first time that we are considering this item ever. We thought we needed to understand their mandate and role within the environment of the South African Defence Force. We know that they are playing an important role, but it's the first time that we are taking a briefing on this matter so that we look at issues through their eyes. And then the next item is a briefing on the Adjutant General. Again, we're looking at briefing by the Adjutant General. We're looking at their mandate capacity, achievements, challenges, including cases submitted, conviction and conviction rate, and so on. And then item number five, as I said, SECDEF is our own report that we'll be considering and adopting for submission to Parliament. And then item number six, we deal with the minutes. And then we close the meeting. Essentially, we need the department, the presence of the department for item number three and four. And the SECDEF has indicated that she would like to withdraw from the platform because she needed to join the minister in Cape Town at someone's time. The minister and the department, they are taking delivery of them, the inshore patrol vessels or vessel. I'm not too sure if it's one or more than one. So that is happening today. And the minister has also apologized to say that he too is... she will start at cabinet at 8:30 and then quickly move to Somers Town. So I'm reporting these two apologies, one from the minister who is not going to be at the meeting because of cabinet and the Somers Town event, and the SecDef who is with us but who has asked to withdraw at 11. I also heard that the DM is attending, the Deputy Minister is attending a cabinet subcommittee meeting this morning that is taking place at the same time as this meeting. So he too will not be in the meeting. Are there any apologies, Brian?
That is correct, Chair. We have an apology from General Wolomisa. We also have an apology from Inkosi Cebekhulu, who is attending the PC on public service. Those are all the apologies, Chair.
I also received an apology from Mr. Dr. Basobi. For some reason, he sent it to a wrong group. I'd asked him to send it to our group, the Portfolio Committee on Defense chat group. So his daughter is graduating this morning. So he had them to do the family, the parental, perform the parental responsibility. He's taking her daughter to the graduation ceremony, or rather accompanying her. So, yes, sir. It's Mr. Marais.
Yes, thank you very much. Just a comment from mine. I think what is happening this morning in Simonstown is quite important, and I think it's historical. That is the first time in many, many years that we received a new Navy vessel. And yes, it's only one, because the next one is next year, and the third one is a year after that. It's actually a pity, not that we might have attended it, but we haven't even received an invitation to attend that. And I mean, we fight every day and every week for more budgets for them. But when it comes to things like this, then it seems like, you know, we're not even on the invitation list. So somehow we must just communicate this. You know, I mean, it is just my sentiments, and it's actually a pity. So thank you.
Yes, I'm sure the SecDef would want to comment on that. She called me yesterday to inform me about this event, and she had thought we had received an invite. And I told her that no, we had not received an invite. She apologized profusely because she thought for an event like this, it would have been, you know, a good gesture to have invited the committee to attend this event. You are right that we have been on their back as a portfolio committee, on their back, and to get to the stage. And we're excited about it, that we're now taking the first delivery of the inshore patrol vessels. And a good, now it's going to improve the capability of the Navy, insofar as protecting our seashore, our sea. All right, but I did receive the invite. It's about 11, 12, and so it's not possible that we can attend it because of this meeting that is taking place. It was late, though. We couldn't do anything about it. All right, but the SECDEF, when the time is right, will simply comment on it. All right, colleagues, let's finish the apologies. I think let's note those apologies. Are there any other apologies, colleagues? Okay. There being none, no further apologies. Let's then, without wasting much time, invite the briefing on the two items. I'll ask the department to do the two one after the other, the briefing one after the other, because I consider them to be two sides of the same coin. There is a connecting thread between the two. So it's better that when we take a discussion, we have this the complete picture, as it were. Agreed, colleagues? All right. No objection. SECDEF, the platform is yours, and so you then kickstart the presentation. Over to SECDEF. Thank you very much for joining the meeting.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, I do agree with the approach that it would assist if the two presentations were taken one after the other because of the subject matter, in as much as they are different, but the issues that are being looked at are more or less the same in terms of the mandate, the resources, and then also the challenges that they may experience. So we do have Admiral Mapoto, who will then present on the part of the military police, and we have our Adjutant General, General Mnisi, who will then deal with the issues of the leader. But before I hand over to them, Chair, if you may just indulge me. One, I agree with the sentiments that have been expressed by both yourself and the Honorable Marais. We have always been waiting on these things, and I also followed up with our colleagues, and in particular, I think Sea Navy, just to have a sense as to whether the portfolio committee has been invited. And I thought that was prudent to do, in the sense that in all our challenges, we have been accompanied by the honorable members of the portfolio committee. So it actually made sense that we invited. Unfortunately, at the time when I managed to talk to Sea Navy, he had said that on his part, he invited those that they needed to invite, but also like the minister from the department, as well as the portfolio committee, would then have to be invited by the chief. So I think probably it was an oversight. He did, though, say that if there was a chance and some were able to come, they would be welcome, but he didn't send the invite. And I want to really apologize on behalf of the department profusely for that. I think it was just an oversight. Normalist was really intended for that. And that's why I called actually you before, just to make sure that you had received the invitation. And I think you have alluded to that. So let me once again apologize. But if there was a chance, the program starts about 12:30, but we have to go through the briefing and a whole host of issues before then the actual program starts. In the event there was a chance of finishing a little bit early, I think the honorable members, those that can, they are more than welcome to come. I think it's a significant milestone on all the work that we have been doing, and we hope that it will take us a step further in terms of the delivery of our mandate and doing the work that we're supposed to be doing as the Defence Force. So thank you, Chairperson. I'll hand over to the two generals to then brief. And if it is okay, Chairperson, I would like to be excused around 10:30, 10:15, 10:45. Thank you.
That's fine. It's okay. So the apologies accepted. Let me welcome Admiral. Not Admiral. Maporta is.
Yes, he is Admiral. Yes, Admiral and General Nisi.
Okay. Admiral Maporta, the platform is yours. How much time do you need? Just take your time because it's your opportunity to make us understand your mandate, role, and challenges. I'm generous, but how much time do you need? General Admiral Maporta?
Chair, I would suggest that if we're struggling with him, maybe we can take General Minister. I see that he is connected. I'm just going to check where Admiral Maporta is.
No, it's fine. General Minister, are you ready?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Yes, I'm ready. I mean, just load the presentation. Can I just be given a few minutes to load the presentation, sir?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
How much time do you need?
Chair, it will. If I look what I did yesterday, maybe 30 minutes will do. But I will try to push.
30 minutes.
Yes, sir.
If you try and reduce it, but we grant you the 30 minutes you're looking for.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair of the PCD, Honorable Traba, Honorable Members of the PCD, the SecDef, the Minister of Defence in absentia, a very good morning. I'm Major General Mnisi, the Adjutant General of the South African National Defence Force, appointed on the 1st of June 2017. Actually, very soon, I'll be 5 years in this post, sir. Honorable Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity once more to do a presentation. It is a rare opportunity for us to come before this August House to brief the PCD about ourselves, about the function that we do for the country. Next slide. Next slide. Chair, the aim of the presentation, go back. The aim of the presentation, as requested, is to brief this Honorable MNM in this August House about the mandate of the Adjutant General, the capacity, achievement, challenges, cases received, and conviction rate, and consequence management within the Department of Defense. Next slide. This is my scope, Chair. Thank you very much. Next slide. Continuation of the scope. Sir, I will start with the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, precisely Section 200, which requires that the Defence Force must be structured and managed as a disciplined military force. I will underscore disciplined military force because that is where the Adjutant General and the Military Police feature in. The Military Discipline Supplementary Measures Act also impact on us. For instance, Section 27 of Military Discipline Supplementary Measures Act deals with the appointment of the Adjutant General by the Minister of Defense and the qualifications and experience needed for that office. Section 28 deals with the functions of the Adjutant General. Next slide. The function of the Adjutant General, in terms of Section 28.1 says, the Adjutant General shall be responsible for the overall management, promotion, facilitation, and coordination of activities in order to ensure the effective administration of military justice and military legal services. So this said is, I mean, it's two prong. Firstly, is an administration of military justice which deal with the court work. Secondly, is any other staff that deals with legal work within the South African National National Defence Force. It can be force development, legal support, force preparation, legal support, force employment, legal support, and litigation support. That is there in the military legal services. And then the Adjutant General is expected annually, but not later than 3 months after the end of each financial year, to submit to the minister, I underscore, to submit to the minister a report on all his or her function during that financial year. In this regard, Honorable Chair, we submit 3 reports, one to the Secretary for Defense, one to the Chief of the South African National Defense Force, and the statutory report to the Minister of Defense. His functions, sir, are executed through a structure we call Defense Legal Services. I put here military stroke defense because in Section 28, if you look above, it deals with the military legal services, not defense legal services. So, but we are legal and defense legal services. Chair, next slide. Honorable Chair, our mandate, we render legal services and legal support to the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans and the Department of Defense at all levels, meaning level Z, level 1, which is the Secretary and the Chief of the Defense Force, level 2, the services, divisional, offices, level 3 formations, and level 4, which is units, meaning we have structures to, we are structured to provide support, support from level 4 up until level 0. Next slide. This is our vision, Chair. DLSD is the best provider of military legal services and related matters in the world. This is our vision, sir. Next slide. Our mission is to provide cutting-edge military legal services to the DoD. Next slide. Now, in order to deal with, to provide the cutting-edge legal support to the DoD, we are structured in the, five lines of legal support, operations. Next slide. So our lines of operations, meaning our structure to support the DoD, is to administer military justice in the SANDF. In administering military legal, military justice in the Defense Force, we have, the Adjutant General, with the, under him, you'll find Military Prosecution, Director Military Prosecution, Directorate Military Defense Council, Directorate Military Judges, Directorate Military Judicial Review, Directorate Military Administration of Justice. And as such, those are sitting at the policy level. Then we have Lexatos sitting at the execution level when it comes to the first bullet. We also have the, force preparation, legal support to the SANDF. That is another capability that we have, whereby we support training, exercises, and everything. We also provide a military law courses to the members of the South African National Defense Force. The third one is to force employment. In this force employment, we have directorate, operations, legal support. All operations of the South African National Defense Force, internally and externally, are supported through that directorate. The last one, Honorable Chair, is the structure that supports us internally, which is, litigation legal support, which is litigating for or against, we litigate for the Defense Force, for the Department of Defense, and we also initiate litigation against those, people or entities that have found themselves across the Department of Defense. Then this one is led by Advocate Ramcharani, who is a civilian. And last but not least, we also have a structure that supports us internally, which is Directorate legal services support. But very soon, this directorate, the same functions, will call it a chief of staff, I mean, the office of the chief of staff of the division. Next slide. Next slide. Chair, in 2017, we drafted and published a document which we call Defense Legal Services Strategic Direction Document for financial year 2017-2018 to financial years 2021-2022 as a vehicle to execute the division's mandate. That is a well-researched, a document, sir. We came up with, certain objectives. Then this document has since been extended by 1 year, 2022-2023, whilst we are going through the Chief of the Defence Force as guidelines, and then Minister's guidelines, SecDef's guidelines, and we also go through now the planning process for financial year 2022-23 to 2027-28. Next slide. Sir, when we look at the objectives that we set ourselves in 2017, when we look at those objectives, I will invite the honorable members through you, Chair, to look at this legend, where at the end of the day, we'll have objectives, but those objectives are contained in a very thick document that is not attached here, sir. So every objectives, we had to go through a work session at the end of the financial year and measure ourselves as to our performance. The legend is as follows. One, unacceptable performance. Two, performance not fully effective. Three, performance fully effective. Four, performance significantly above expectation. Five, outstanding performance. Let's go through the main objectives. Next slide. These are the objectives that we set ourselves, Chair. And unfortunately, when we took over, in 2017, the Honorable House will remember that is when the Department of Defense started suffering huge financial cuts. We had to survive, but no matter what happened, we had to survive. We set ourselves to ensure the finalization of the military disciplinary bill. We gave ourselves a three-chair, because the department did whatever that ought to have been done internally. And the bill was definitely tabled by the Minister of Defense in Parliament and later on withdrawn. But internally, we did ourselves, we did everything that we ought to have done. Therefore, the performance is fully effective. Then the second one, reduce the salary bill in the medium term to 88, and then in the long term to 76%. We also gave ourselves a tree. And I want to say, it's not taking people's money, is to restructure the division so that there is return on investment on the salaries that we pay to members. Three, to enforce a planning, budgeting, and monitoring tradition at all levels. On this one, sir, performance significantly above expectations, because before, planning and budgeting was centralized at the headquarters. Now we had to decentralize planning and budgeting up until the lowest level, which is Lexatos. Then four, to improve service delivery, we definitely came up with a lot of issues, sir, that improved service delivery, and indeed we performed. We gave ourselves a four on that level. Five, to rebrand DLSD. Chair, people didn't know the division. Now we are where other services and divisions are. It can be at the Easter show or Ren show. It can be at the Armed Forces Day. It can be anywhere you'll find the division. So we give ourselves a four. Then the lower the trust and credibility deficits. Yes, there was a time whereby commanders didn't trust us. They thought that we were inexpensive, but we didn't definitely give our best. Then we had to definitely work hard to earn the trust of the commanders. To professionalize the service, there are interventions that we have come up with in order to professionalize the service that we render. For instance, all MAPs are expected to be admitted as advocates or attorneys, and we are pushing to do that and belong to professional bodies. We send them to courses to specialize on certain issues like fraud and corruption, etc., Chair. To build and empower the reasonable, trained, and competent military professionals, the defense review requires us, when I say us, not only military legal services people, MLPs, requires that we must have military professionals. We are soldiers first, and we are lawyers then. Therefore, we are military lawyers. We have to empower ourselves, train ourselves, military courses, and also academic courses are put that, meaning we are doing more than any other person, Chair. Nine, to restructure the division in order to align it to the current needs of the DOD. Structure follows strategy, Chair, and structure is not permanent. As the DOD, as the South African National Defense Force, changes to one direction, we follow that. Exactly as what I said above, that we are restructuring currently in order to align ourselves with what the Army, Air Force, Navy, SAMS are doing. We are definitely restructuring on that, again, without asking money from the fiscal. Establish a performance monitoring section and special attention to be paid to the administration of justice. Chair, sir, on this one, we have what to call, a meeting that sits 4 times a year, every quarter, which we call accountability board, where every individual is discussed, look his performance in terms of the PMTS, look his, where is that, and we hold them accountable. If they reach targets, we write members letters to congratulate them and ask them to do even more. Those who don't meet targets, Chair, we also write them letters and train them, retrain them, and where a member is not trainable at all, we ask Chief HR to separate that person. But due process is followed. Why on this one, Chair? There was an expectation before that military lawyers at court were expected to finalize 20 cases a year. And we found that it is very poor, it's very low, and the inflow of cases definitely killed us. Therefore, now we said every MLP in court, special prosecutors, will do 60 cases a year, defense counsel, 72 cases a year, judges also, they have got their own targets. Next slide. Next slide. 11, establish and maintain a research and development capability in the DLSD. 12, to draw and maintain a leadership strategy that will address inter alia the type of MLP for the future, their recruitment, development, utilization, promotion, separation. We gave ourselves a four, we were afraid of giving ourselves a 5 on this one. We developed a leadership manual for that, specifically for the division. Chapter 1 deals with general leadership concepts, and the second chapter deals with leadership and supervision within the DLSD. Also, we're sending members on course, both functional courses and development courses, so that at the end of the day, when we appoint a person, we give him a next higher rank. That person must definitely be trained, exposed, mentored. Rank is just an additional responsibility. And number 13, sir, investigate the possibility of acquiring the DLSD building that will house offices, military courts, and School of Military Justice. On this one, Chair, we have done everything we could, and we nearly get money last year, 130 million rands to do the building. The building is there, has been identified, but unfortunately, there is no money to revamp in the division. Now we have a challenge at this one, especially the litigation section, which have 1.6 contingent liabilities, but their offices where they work is not an office of lawyers that manage 1.6 contingent liability. Which is a problem. To empower lawyers from the previously disadvantaged communities when briefing councils, Chair, this point 14 was definitely drafted long before some lawyers, lawyers doit or went to the union buildings crying that state attorney is overlooking them. We have the social responsibility on this one, but we do it through the state, the state attorney. When we brief state attorney, we will definitely request, give us a counsel or 1, 2, 3, then they will definitely put that. But we gave ourselves a 3, 15, establish a small in-house litigation section to appear in court on behalf of the DOD. Chair, here is a very important one. You will see that we're spending a lot of money on legal fees, and we have qualified lawyers who do prepare, appear in court for private clients, but those lawyers cannot appear on behalf of, in court on behalf of this thing. We have done something on this one, sir. We have approached the LPC, Legal Counsel Practice, and our School of Military Law has been accredited to run a pupillage. And then that pupillage, if we are funded, it will definitely start in September 2022. But if not, then we'll align with every pupillage program and start in January 2021. As I'm speaking to you, my colleagues are hard at work trying to fix the toilets at the School of Military Justice and trying to get the library books so that we confirm, we're definitely up to date with the requirements of our accreditation. We are accredited for 3 years there. Next slide. Sixteen, create a capability dealing with highly classified cases in the military courts. Honorable Chair, here we gave ourselves a 2 because we didn't really, because we didn't move. There are a lot of stakeholders, defense intelligence, and military, police crime, intelligence, because here, sir, we want to control the food chain from the crime investigation up until the matter is finalized in court, because there are sometimes we are faced with sensitive issues that if they are litigated somewhere, we'll have a problem. But we cannot afford not to definitely take those people who break the law in court because of the secrets of issues. But we have to be responsible. We want to build this capability. Number 17, sir, there are these specialist legal support. These are not generic legal support. We have to determine that we need maritime operations legal support capability, airborne operations legal support capability, air and space operations legal support capability, cyber warfare legal support capability, SNDF operations legal support doctrine, joint battle handling course for MLPs, DLSD on military exercise. So those that are underlined, sir, we have already done. We have established and we have parachute qualified military lawyers, 15 of them, and we definitely still building that capability to support special forces, airborne forces, air-landed operations, sea-landed operations, and the one that we are building now in the Defense Force, counter-terrorism. That capability needs to be established, Chair. We have submitted for approval SNDF operations legal support doctrine. We didn't have the doctrine. The country didn't have legal operations legal support doctrine. Now the doctrine was approved 2020 November. Joint battle handling course for MLPs at a tactical level, Chair. Military lawyers provide combat service legal support and support. Like logisticians, like personnel service corps, they have their own doctrine, they have their own courses, how to support war. But legal services, we didn't have that, but we have started running the courses. We've already run 4 courses, so far as said. Then defense legal services on military exercise. After members have done the course, they go for the exercise. We call it Exercise Mafadi, Chair. Exercise Mafadi, Chair, starts at the command post exercise, where we teach our soldiers the identification of the following. 1, national South Africa's national interest. 2, they have to scenario writing. 3, scenario interpretation. 4, legal support at national strategic level of war, legal support at the military strategic level of war, legal support at operational level of war. Then at a later stage is FTX, field training exercise, where members now go to the field. Meaning what I want to say is the field is just the smallest dot of the exercise. The exercise is a bigger picture and is growing by strength. He started with MLPs. Now so, military police are part of the exercise.
General, you are now, from your 30 minutes, are now left with 5 minutes.
I will finish, sir. Then, 18, to ensure all MLPs remain current. Next slide. Honorable Chair, sir, as I said, over and above what we do in military courts, we're also responsible for training. For the past 5 years, we conducted 1,919 members of the South African National Defense Force, including military lawyers on different courses. Next slide. Next slide. Sir, when it comes to our successes, cases finalized, the legend is there, opening balance, cases received, finalized cases, closing balance. As the chair will see, 2018-19, we finalized 2,485 cases. 2,058 cases. The 2 other financial years, because of COVID, there were no activity or there were limited activities in court. Our concern, Chair, is the inflow of cases. Next slide. Our conviction rate, sir, 1920, 74%, 2021, 69%, 2022, 72%. Next slide. As you can see in this slide, sir, 90%, between 90 to 93% of our budget goes to salaries. Next slide. The verdict, sir, is that we are, as a division, 3.6 in our performance. Therefore, we are investable. Next slide. Next slide. Sir, here, these are issues from this slide. Issues that we are doing, but they are not funded. But we still do these things, but they are not funded. And we promise that no, we could do more if all these projects were funded. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. I will jump in some of these slides, sir. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Go to slide 42. Sir, this is a slide also that we want to demystify certain issues. Here we discuss issues regarding consequence management. If you look at the block, I will move from one, which is from left to right. If something something has happened, then the suspicion, either it will go to them, to the AG, SA, SIU, IG, or any other investigation issue. After that, the report will be sent, will be compiled and sent to the command line. The command line must complain, Chair. Must definitely complain, open up a docket. Without docket, number 5 cannot happen. If number 5 does not happen, number 6 cannot happen. Meaning without a complaint, military police cannot open up a docket. And if military police do not have a docket, therefore, Legal Service Division cannot take the matter to court. So some of the projects, some of the reports are definitely stuck as a result of decisions at number 4. So we definitely receive reports, but if there's no case open, there's nothing that the police and legal services can do. Next slide. Sir, we talk about the restructuring. This is what we want to show, in this slide. If you look at the bottom, lieutenant captains, major, this is the production level, but with only 6 and 32 members. And then you look at the lieutenant colonel, which is the supervisory level, then we have 101 of them, and with excess of 58. Therefore, the restructuring is that all a vacant funded lieutenant colonel posts will be definitely pushed to the bottom, and for one lieutenant colonel's salary, we can hire 2 lieutenants on that, so that we can definitely expand and do the work as expected. Next slide. Chair, we want to reemphasize, again, humbly so, sir, that if the division, especially on operations, is properly funded, we will grow, or we may grow, being a 3.6 to a 4 performance organization, sir. Next slide. I thank you, sir, for the opportunity that given to us to present to you this important part of the South African National Defence Force, the DoD, which is Defence Legal Services mandate, sir. I submit myself, to your questions.
Thank you very much, General, for your presentation. May I then quickly invite Admiral Mopoto to do his presentation as agreed. Thanks, General Nisi.
Thank you, sir.
It's Admiral Mopoto in the back, is on the platform. Brian, can you check? Admiral Mopoto. You don't see him on the platform?
No, sir.
And so we. What do we do now? Who can assist? I'm trying to look on at the SNDF DoD team on the platform. I I know that despite the first withdrawn, she wanted to withdraw at Connet, I think she has. Nisi, General Nisi, do you see Admiral, your colleague Admiral Mopoto on the platform?
No, sir. When I look at this, I mean, says you are supposed to be on the that side, and then I'm in Gauteng. So, but I can't see him on the platform, so I will try to check him.
Oh, we send the military police to look for him. Okay. Maybe let's do this, General. Let's discuss your presentation to save time. Yes. Yes,
he's ready. His phone is off. I'm trying to call him.
His phone is off.
It's off, yeah.
Ooh, okay. Please just continue to trace him, Marimi. In the meantime, we'll be taking a discussion on General Nisi's presentation. Colleagues, can you do that to save time? Do you agree? Is there any objection? All right, doesn't look like there's any. All right. Colleagues, can I note the hands, please? Can I note the hands before I call you? Who's first? Can I note the hands? I cannot see the hands on the. I cannot see the icons on the system. Mr. Mare, are you first?
Well, it depends on whether you want me to go first, sir. Thank you.
No, who's number one? I don't know. Can I? Okay.
I don't know. I can't see who's number one and two.
No. Are you wanting to talk?
Yeah.
Okay. Please, anyone who wants to talk to indicate, that's what I'm asking, to shout.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this.
No. Just so before that, can I get the names first?
Yeah, yes, sir.
It's Mare.
Note me as well, sir.
Come again?
You can note me, sir.
Yes. After Tabo, who else? Okay, we have only two hands. Okay, let's start, Mr. Mare.
Chairperson, yes, thank you for the presentation. This is the first time that really in a very, very long time that we've heard anything about this division, which is very, very important in the Defence Force. If you look at the Constitution, it talks about a disciplined force, and that's Section 200, subsection 1. So it's for no simple reason that is number one, so if we want to establish that and we want to be a successful defense force, the role of this division is very, very important. We know that for a very long time they've been neglected to a large extent due to budget, but also there's a very slow pace in terms of how military judges were appointed and even prosecutors and people like that. So at least we are now at a point. However, I am concerned that, they are hamstruck in terms of their abilities. And the one thing that we must make very sure is that they are properly resourced. And I am not convinced that they are currently effectively resourced in terms of both manpower and funding. And unfortunately, in the field where they are operating in, you will know as a legal person that those are specialized services and it costs a lot of money. And we have to be market related in terms of the budget as well, and to attract the right people to make sure that we can instill this discipline. So, the only thing that I want to ask is more will have to be done with less, unfortunately. in the state where we are, and I know that there's an indication of you know, cost of employees will be go down to 76%, but we need to know what will be the effect of lower cost of employees, because I am concerned then that then we will not be able to appoint or attract the right people that we need for this job. So can more information, you know, be given to us in terms of you know, resourcing and what they actually need, and how that objective to decrease from 88% to 76%, how that will impact on the expected outcomes and results of all of them. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murray. Mr. Thabo Motle.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to colleagues and everybody on the platform. Chair, mine is it's simple. I just want to get it from the Adjutant General. What are the rate of convictions or that they normally make? Because he said, I think somewhere in the presentation he mentioned the number of cases that they should be allocated, I don't know, to judges or prosecutors. I'm not sure if you can expand on that, but I need to know the cases that they receive that they have to deal with. What is the rate of conviction, and what are the most common crimes that they deal with in the military? What is then the impact their portfolio, the legal division, is making to correct those crimes committed? I'm saying this because in a civilian system, you have the courts, you've got the correctional services, you've got the police, which interacts with the three will interact. The police will police, then you go to the courts, you are prosecuted, you are sent to the correctional service. And the correctional service role is to ensure that it's not to penalize offenders, but to ensure that they correct them so that when they come out of those facilities, they are changed individually in terms of perspective and how they will then be integrated into the society. So within the military community, is that done to ensure that you correct those offenders and you reintegrate them into the military community? And you also made mentions of funding, which is a bit of a challenge, and we are well aware that funding is a problem across. Will that funding only address your vision in terms of the structures and your project that you want to engage on only, or will it also respond to my question that when you are fully funded, will the crimes that are committed within the military then be reduced because you'll be able to effectively exercise your responsibility and become a deterrent from those who are tempted to commit crime within the military community? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, in fact, Thabo has covered me. Thank you very much, Honorable Mutler, for that. But let me just raise the other two that are that were not covered by the two colleagues. I think Let me just, I mean, Mare also covered one area. Let me start with Mare's point because I want to reinforce it. I mean, generally, if you say the one of the ways of reducing budget is to ensure that you reduce the number at a lieutenant colonel level. You said there are about 101. That's at a senior level. Yet production happens at a lower level, at a lower level where you are sitting with the 6 and the 32 members. I think you are talking about lawyers. You said you are recruiting lawyers and advocates. And a lawyer doesn't come cheap. I think that's what the point Marie raised. You see, a salary of a lawyer would, a minimum salary of a lawyer would be at a level of a deputy director. In any what you call a system of government, there is a problem because if you want a lawyer, you must be prepared to pay at that level. So they come in at a senior level, but the problem is when you translate that into your ranking, then you actually place that person. What's the level below a brigadier, quickly?
Is a colonel, sir.
Is a colonel. A lieutenant colonel is between, a lieutenant colonel, or is a full colonel?
Is a full colonel, and the lieutenant colonel is below a full colonel, sir.
Yes. You see, a brigadier is a director. I'm talking about a direct translation. Obviously, lawyers would come in at that level, because their salary demands to be placed at that level. The problem is number one, discussing salary is one thing, but as soon as you translate it, to translate that into rank levels, it would place that person at a senior, at a management level, you know, deputy director, and a director, or a colonel, or a brigadier level. But if you say, no, that's too senior, you want to them to start at a lower level, you're not going to get an advocate, you're not going to get an attorney, there lies your problem. I don't know how you're going to address that. So you is a situation of paying peanuts and If you want a monkey, you pay peanuts or something.
If you're buying peanuts, you'll get monkeys.
Is it going to be a situation of if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys? So you must be clear and what level of skill you are looking for. What is the market-related remuneration for that skill? And then make a decision. Not influenced by your pecking order within the defense force, because you are acting in a very unique environment. I'm saying this to reinforce what Mr. Murray has just said. And then coming to the point that Thabo raised, Thabo says you mentioned special prosecutors and the number of cases. We said previously it was 20 cases per annum, and you said no, that's not on. You then increased it, and you also gave the number of defense counsel, the number of cases. If you could just repeat that. And then lastly, how many advocates and how many attorneys do you have on your system? Over to you. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, sir. Also, thanks for the questions. I will attempt to answer them, sir. And where we don't have answers for now, we will write them down and revert to you, sir, in due course. Sir, I will first address the Honorable Mare's questions. And also, we really accept his comments with regard to, the constitutional mandate, also the role that the legal services plays, and also the fact that we are, neglected. And Chair, I didn't want to deliberately so. I didn't want to say certain issues, use this platform as a complaint as such, but I wanted to give you the information so that you make your own analysis. Analysis. Yes, somewhere we are not. If you look at the 90% and the 10% on the operations, we are aware that the country is not doing well economically, and we have to do. With what we have and pray for them and for their best. Now, when it comes to, let me just explain the issue of restructuring, Honorable Chair. Firstly, Chair, we make our own attorneys and lawyers, and advocates. We don't, our recruitment is the hybrid, Chair. Firstly, we recruit the privates, the corporals that are already in line, either an infantier or the police, whatever. After they've qualified with LLB, they apply to come and transferred to the division. They come as they are. Now we'll have to send them on military courses, also on the courses that we are talking about, functional courses, as said. But what we want to clarify on the restructuring, Chair, I don't think any living organization can have more people at a supervisory level than people at the production level. You cannot have more supervisors than the supervisees, and we're facing that current situation, sir. So what we want to say, what we're trying to say here is that as people grow, they age, natural attrition takes course, then people leave. The lieutenant colonel's post will definitely be translated into the lieutenant and the captain post, and you will hire two people for that. Then those are already lieutenant colonels, majors, and then they're growing up with the experience. You remain there with that experience as they grow. Actually, what we're trying to say, we grow our own team, but we want to correct the situation whereby one person ends, that thing. Many people at the supervisory level are there, and there are no people at the bottom. So yes, it was definitely rent issues, but we have OSD. Occupation-specific dispensation. We are working through that OSD, Chair, to make sure that whatever we do, consultation and everything is in line. But the more importantly, we need more lieutenants and majors, and captains. Reason why, Honorable Chair and Honorable Marais, is that lieutenant colonels don't deploy, Chair. People who support military operations are lieutenants and captains. Now, just check the involvement of South African National Defense Force in Africa and elsewhere. The cost support, the exercises that we provide, only lieutenants and captains can do, can do that. And they are very, very, very few, sir. So within the current fiscal challenges, we need to build that capability there. So we did what we call staff tables. How many lieutenants do we need? How many captains do we need? How many lieutenant colonels do we need? So we will do it responsibly, sir, without losing what you call the experience that we've already built, because we grow our own timber as sir. Then the effect of the lower cost to employees and attract issues. Now I was talking about one side. The other side, chair of recruiting. We will be going out. We did go out to outside the Defence Force in 2012. Very soon also we'll be going out where we recruit 0 years of experience. Zero military years of experience, zero legal years of experience. We take them as long as they are local graduates, we bring them in, we train them, and then we grow them up as our team, the timber. After 5 years, there will be the good timber that we need. Those that want to stay will stay. Those that have leadership potential or whatever they want to go, they will go, sir. So we will have to do that. So the issue of reducing cost of employees, as I've said, Chair, it is not about taking the money from the salaries. It is about any one lieutenant colonel's post who retires, that lieutenant colonel retires, you convert it into production level, you hire two lieutenants, and you will save money on that. Say you'll hire two lieutenants, and you produce it, but you're still gonna save money. When we look at our OSD, how much is ML1 and ML2 are paid vis-a-vis ML5? So we did our staff work. For instance, you find that a lieutenant colonel with more than 20 years and around 900,000 rands. But if you go to ML1, you'll find that 300,000 rands. Therefore, you can hire two or three people on the same post and grow your own timber. The division is is aging, sir. The division is aging. So it is not about taking money. It's about using the same money, but elasticize it, Honorable Mares, sir. To Honorable Moses, to you, Chair, sir, the conviction rate, sir, is, we said, in 2019-2020 financial year, the conviction rate was 74%. 2020-2021 financial year, the conviction rate was 69%. On 2021-22, the financial year that ended in April, the conviction rate was 72%. So that is the conviction rate. The offenses that we take to our military courts, it depends, but most important, mostly are disciplinary related. Misconducts like AWOL, stealing, a theft, stealing estate property. Assaulting one another, all those things. We also have now issues of, we also dealing with fraud and corruption, and we see that also growing. And in response to that, we send our prosecutors to either AGSA, National Treasury, and other organizations to specialize on. On fraud and corruption and money related issues, Chair. Then when it comes to the impact or the interlink between military courts and correctional services, sir, our military courts, if they find a person guilty and is sentenced to imprisonment, that person serves his or her sentence in a correctional services that the court determined. They don't serve their sentences in any military site. There is a relationship and also protocols with correctional services, because an offense is also captured by the MPs with their docket is linked to the SAPS, so it makes things very easy when we refer our members there. And when they are there, they are dealt with in terms of correctional services regulations, not in terms of our defense, I mean, act or military discipline. We hand them over that side, they'll be taken care of as such. The issue of offenses growing, so we said in the before, you will find that we were allocating 20 cases per prosecutor. That was not scientific, and even that time, you will find certain prosecutors will not even finalize those 20 cases, although others will finalize times three. Now, when we look at the inflow of cases that we put on the slide 20, if we finalize 20 cases, today we'll be definitely being drowned by cases. So we look at the inflow, we look at the number of prosecutors, and we allocated those cases. Now, a prosecutor is expected to finalize at least 60 cases minimum. For a defense counsel, they are expected to finalize 72 cases minimum. For military judges, is 100 and something, chair. All military judges, however, chair, because of fraud and corruption, we have reduced the number of our expectations when it comes to senior military judges, because those are the judges that deal with fraud and corruption cases, and they take time. So we have reduced that to 20 cases per senior military judge, taking into account also some of the senior military judges also sit at the military court of appeals. So senior military judges deal with fraud and corruption. We reduce our expectations to 20, sir. So that is what we dealt with. With regard to Honorable Mute, then when it comes to your good self, Honorable Chair, sir, the rejection of Lieutenant Colonels is a natural consequence, Chair, as I've said, which is rebalancing without affecting the service delivery, because we don't recruit lawyers. We make our lawyers from those people who we recruit from outside, and we recruit inside with those qualifications. And again, we will do it responsibly, because if we don't do anything now, as we fail to do, there's a reason why 90% of our staff goes to cost of employees. And also, your sentiments are very correct, sir. Your sentiments are very correct. Lawyers are very expensive, especially military lawyers will be very expensive, because they don't only do academic issues, they also expected to do military issues, so that they can be relevant to the organization that they support. And as said, we received an issue in 2020. We had a colloquium in South Africa, 36 countries. We hosted that with the USA, AFRICOM, and we are the only people training our lawyers the way that we train it in Africa, sir. So some countries, they wanted to come and benchmark from us, but unfortunately, because of COVID issues, they couldn't come, sir. The issue of rank and level, we have separated salaries from the rank, sir. We have separated salaries from the rank. The only person who's paid by the rank is the adjutant general. Currently is not paid as a professional, as a professional. As to why, I don't know. He was never part of the OSD, and that affects the office. When it comes to anybody else, We don't pay according to the rank. We pay according to qualifications and experience, sir. Also, sir, I want to also to debunk issues. We will find somewhere, sir, that a person worked as a lieutenant in one post up until a lieutenant colonel. One post, same office, same bathroom, everything. That denies the division of leadership, of leadership strategies there. Because now this person becomes a lieutenant, but he only knows how to prosecute. He cannot supervise or given added responsibility. But because of our training that we're trying to address, that job rotation is one of our strategic issues there, then we're trying to expose members in as more portfolios as possible. Sir, if there's any issue that I definitely left, sir, I plead guilty in that regard, Chair. Then it's not because of I wanted to leave it, but I've tried to answer those things that I've jotted down, sir. I submit, Chair.
Yes, no, you did. I think there's a question of what are the most common crimes that team has had to deal with, and then the common sentences that they pass, the military judges pass.
Thank you very much,
Chair. Before he proceed, maybe if he can also indicate, because he has made mention of them. I thought. Sexual harassment will be part when he comes. So, in terms of rating, where will sexual offences be rated at within the military?
Well, he did respond to the question. Okay, my apologies, General. You did touch on it, but he needs this addition. Over to General.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the issue of sexual offences, and also thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to look at that. And I'll be very sensitive also on issuing that. But at the end of the day, I must be honest to the House as an Adjutant General. The issue of sexual, offences, our troops are charged on that when they are deployed outside the Republic of South Africa in terms of UN regulations, where they prevent or they prohibit even consensual sexual relations between or amongst people. It's forbidden. So that's why it's sexual offense, and abuse this year. So on that one, yes, we have a number of them that came in there. But it is not rape. It's not sexual assault. It's just consensual sexual relations are prohibited, deployed on UN members and host countries. So that is the first one that we have to do. Then when it comes to inside the country, sir, it is not what we paint to be in the military. There is no crisis of rape and whatever within them the military. There are cases, I cannot say how many I am in now, but there are cases that are mentioned and there are very few. There are very few. We have just prosecuted two recently, and the person was found, the accused people were found not guilty. The accused was found not guilty. It emanated from the DRC. But it was sensationalized when it came here. But evidence with WhatsApp evidence and WhatsApp communication between the two showed that no, it was a consensual sexual relation between a South African and a South African. But when it came here, then the person was treated as the most, I'm trying to be sensitive here, sir, but I don't know. And it definitely attracted a lot of issues. But fortunately, we took the matter to court. We gave our best prosecutors. We definitely went through And there are lessons learned on how to deal with sexual related offenses within the department, because we definitely also work with the Department of Justice telling us, but it is not, the picture is not what we think it is. The picture, which is very bad, is the fear emanating from the DRC. Now, when those offenses come,
fear simply because they are special offenses. It's a special offense in terms of the United Nations.
Yes, sir.
Protocol. Okay.
Yes, sir. In South Africa, we don't prohibit sexual relations between two adults, but under UN, host countries, because it has, one is financially good, one is definitely financially weak, therefore the relations are not equal according to the UN. So hence they prohibit that. So our troops are vulnerable and we charge them for that. But when they commit that inside the country, we don't, only sexual offenses, harassment and sexual whatever. But when it comes to rape and other issues, they are referred to the SAPS, they are referred to the NPA, because we don't have jurisdiction. Our military courts don't have jurisdiction in trying those cases. Then the most common sentences, Chair, our military courts are governed by statutes. They have competent jurisdiction when it comes to sentences. Then the most popular sentence that we find now is a fine. And the military court cannot fine a person for more than 6,000 rands. In terms of the current legislation, and we try to, to amend that. And as South Africans, allow me to say this sometimes, sometimes we want our staff buttered both ways. There are people who say 6,000 rands is okay. There are people who say now 6,000 rand is not okay. We have what we call cashiering. Cashiering is still in our statutory books. There are people who say it definitely undermines the dignity of individual. We send people for, sentence them, our military court sentence them to imprisonment. There are both arguments for and against. Sometimes people, even the MDP, you'll remember, some people who said, no, the sentences in the MDP were very harsh. So the question is now, as an adjutant general, sometimes myself, I'm not satisfied about the sentences, some sentences, but actually, now I'm just an adjutant general, I'm not a judge, and I cannot interfere with the sentencing of the judge. We only intervene sometimes during the workshops when we convey, skillfully so, the views of South Africans when it comes to the shocking sentences, when it comes to fines, sometimes. If the fines were definitely invested, we'll be very rich as a department, because our military judges are inclined to give sentences of a fine. We are, persuading to consider other issues, especially on serious offenses, but ours ends there. We cannot tell them what to do, Chester.
Okay.
Colleagues, Mr.
Yes. No. Thank you very much, General. Thank you very much for your presentation, and it's enlightening, and it will certainly help us in understanding how your work integrate with the work of the other divisions and services within the defense force, and of course and the Department of Defense as a whole. Thank you very much for your presentation, and I think, colleagues, we can then now move to the next presentation. Generally, you are free to exit the platform at any time when you want to. Now, I'm not too sure if Admiral Mopoto is back. Admiral Maputo, are you back?
Yes, Chairperson.
Oh, it's Mocha.
I'm here. I'm sorry that there was a bit of mix-up and I was at a place where there was no Wi-Fi, but I managed to get to a place where there's Wi-Fi. Okay. Just request the Secretariat to fly to the presentation, please.
Our Secretary, do you mean? You mean our Secretary, Admiral?
I was requesting that the Secretariat Chair fly my presentation. I've asked them from the SecDef's office. I'm not sure if
they can hear me. Is the Chief of Staff in the meeting?
I am not sure, sir.
That is very correct, Chair. As well as I was struggling, but I'm here now. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome, Chief of Staff.
Good morning, sir. Good morning.
Thank you very much. All right.
May the Secretariat just write the presentation from my side. I'll struggle a bit.
Is the Secretariat responding? Oh, finally it is.
I'm doing it from my side, sir.
Oh, yeah, I'm not too sure if you use the same presentation. For some reason, I saw two different versions. Am I wrong, Brian?
Yes, this is not the one.
Ah.
Yeah, but this...
this is not the one I suspected.
Let me allow them to fly from their side.
Yes, I thought so. I don't want this admin to be confused.
There's two, and we submitted two. Now this is not the one that is complete. I'm not sure if they can just go to the second one.
Who exactly are you asking to do the? I know it's someone in the executive's office, but I don't hear any response from them. Let's hope they're in the meeting.
I'm not a co-host. I can't share from my side.
Yeah.
No, you can share, Reggie.
No, it's not a co-host yet.
I'm not a co-host.
Make him a co-host.
Chair, I've given rights to anybody that is in the meeting to share.
Oh.
So Reggie is able to share, yes.
Okay. Okay, Reggie, two again.
Let me just check. Or maybe I should take no notes.
Yeah. Can be Brian. Just designate him as a. Now it's written ghost. Should be easy now. Should be easy, Reggie.
Hey, I'm shy. I can't share, Chair.
You can't share?
I can't share,
No, Baba. Hey, mind you, I will not ask the Admiral to do it because he was born before technology and he would struggle. General, can you try? Can you try?
Try his way.
Please, just make him a co-host, Brian. Oh, my daughter. Same as in Fulway, chief of the Defense Force. He does it with ease. But I'm not too sure about the Chief of Staff.
they can just say the previous one. I'll summarize from the one that I'm having. Because I don't know if I'm not going to waste too much.
You see, my problem, we want to know what presentation, what version do you admit as the current version?
It's the corrected one, the one that I wanted them to change from the one that they had on the screen. So I gave it to them. That's what I'm trying as well from my side.
Marima, why can't you transfer the thing, email it to Brian?
I'm doing that, Chair.
Yes, to short circuit everything so that the version we present today is the one we admit and is part of our record.
I did, Chair.
You did, okay.
Yeah.
I think that you never experienced this problem, Admiral, before. I think it's the first time.
Yeah, normally I'm good with these things, but this one doesn't want to attach to the screen. I don't know.
I don't know what's wrong. I also don't know what's wrong. I nearly recommended a crash course.
Can't believe this.
Brian, are you succeeding?
Chair, I am on my mails. The mail has not come through yet.
Ooh, Lubaba. Luigi? Who's sharing now? Is this the one, Admiral, you were looking for?
Yes, sir, this is the one.
This is the one, okay. And yes. Are you sharing? Who's sharing?
No, somebody put it on. I'm not sure.
Is that you? I'm asking so that we know who is expected to roll it up.
Somebody's got it on now and I could start.
Yes, but now if it has no ownership, then we'll have a problem with rolling it up.
It's Kenan Mutum from Chief of Staff side.
Oh, yes, Kenel. Okay, it's fine. Okay, so the two of you will then be communicating.
Okay,
sir. Over to you, General Admiral.
Thank you, and sorry for the delay. I think I must learn the system chairperson again. Thank you to the members of the committee and the
chief. How much time do you need, General? We're now pressed for time. 20 minutes?
It cannot take over 20 minutes. It should be very short.
Over to you.
Thank you. Aubrey, if you can go to the next slide. Just go back, let's start from. Yes, as I said, this is Admiral Mapoto. The aim of the presentation is to brief the Portfolio Committee on Defense on the military police mandate, capacity, challenges, and achievements. Next slide. This will be my short scope. As I said, our vision is to be an effective vanguard for military discipline in the Republic with a mission that we must detect,
prevent and investigate crime, to ensure a disciplined military force capable to execute its constitutional mandate, as well as to provide prepared and equipped military police forces to support the joint force employment requirement of the SNU. Our motto is unity is strength. Next. This is just our values that we aspire towards as the division, all from the acronym discipline. Our mandate is therefore to provide and manage the military policing capability for the DoD for employment in service to ensure the sovereignty and protection of the Republic and its territorial integrity, and service in compliance with international obligations of the Republic to international bodies. Next one. This is our, in terms of the regulatory framework, starting with the Constitution, that we know that defense must be structured and managed as a disciplined military force. This is in accordance with Section 201. Section 202 of the Constitution states that the primary objective of the defense force is to defend and protect the Republic, its territorial integrity, its people, and its people in accordance with the Constitution and the principles of international law regulating the use of force. In accordance with the Defense Act, Act 42 of 2002, the military police is appointed in terms of Section 30A by the chief of the SANDF or by an officer appointed by chief of the SANDF, which means the Provost Marshal General. Military police have the same powers, duties, and functions as a member of the SAPS in terms of Section 31(2)A. And the Provost Marshal General therefore has the same status as the SAPS Provincial Commissioner within the DoD framework. He is the Chief Disciplinary Officer for the SANDF or for CSADF and the Primary Crime Prevention and Investigating Officer of the SANDF. Whereas SAPDF, in his higher capacity as the accounting officer of the DoD, requires inspection or investigation. The matter, or in the matter that affects or concerns the SANDF, he or she can request the SANDF to have the matter investigated by the military police. Next. The military police key objectives and deliverables are as follows. The strategic direction that is managed by the Office of the Provost Marshal General in terms of formulating, promulgating, and control strategy and policies of the Military Police Division. Other objectives is to provide policing capacity to the DoD through military police regions and structures that are geographically placed across the RSA. Two detention barracks, where we have custody of our military offenders, one at in Wynberg in Cape Town and the other one at Tembe Military Base in Bloemfontein. Provide force preparation through the military police school. That is for functional policy. But just maybe to say more on this is that for specialized training, military police has an agreement with the South African police that we send our members for specialization in their colleges, and where we also send our members for skills training to the colleges and universities around the country, as well as in foreign with foreign learning opportunity. Next one. Other force preparation, as I said, is done with military police school. And this thing, I think it's just a repetition, I'm sorry.
forced employment is done to support Chief of Joint Operations with combat ready regular and reserve force MP forces in support of the DOD by means of 13 Provost Company. I must just say here quickly that 13 Provost Company is capacitated for this, but not well structured for this effort. Therefore, we use members of the normal military police regions who are supposed to be doing investigation crime prevention to support 13 Pro in this. Of course, the military police intelligence that provide intelligence, crime intelligence capabilities to the military police by means of their duties of conducting intelligence through collections and other means. In terms of the nodal point on criminality, the military police is the function in the component in the defense force that provides functional policy guidance to the DOT on anti-criminality matters. The execution, as far as that requires, lies at the services and divisions. Also provides policy direction for protection and security guidance. That is inclusive of VIP post protection as now lying with the Provost Marshal General. Next one. The other issue in terms of the challenges now is that we police a department of the SANDF that is about 73,000 strong with its military community that can get to about 300 or more do crime prevention with the post that are only 216. Our investigation posts in our structure is 129, and which is very too few in terms of the cases that we investigate in terms of our requirements. And if you can look at our financial year 2021-2022, we investigated cases to the excess of 2,944. And that would mean that each investigator will have about 23 cases if we just divide them equitably. But that is not the case, because this, we just wanted to show you what is the ratio per investigator. But there's more investigators, there's investigators that investigate even more than 50 based on their seniority and responsibility. We operate in a complex and organized crime that requires specialized investigators per case, and which these cases sometimes take between 5 to 10 years. At any given stage, approximately 15 investigators are required to deploy on both corona and external operations. That then reduces our capability for investigation. A limited number of specialized investigator posts is also one of the challenges to do specialized and organized crime. In equating of the rank in terms of the structure to address the disparity of ranks when conducting investigation and effecting arrest, you might recall that in our investigation or arrest, officers can only arrest officers, and the junior ranks then that we have in the branches sometimes find it difficult because they are soldiers first, and thereafter they are investigators. The structure itself in terms of challenges is we have reduced from 1,601, of which 1,462 is military police post. The others are 139 support personnel, which even in itself, it's not that much. We've got about 42 PSAC posts. Our current reserve strength is 207. There's a lack of funding for reserve to supplement or reinforce policy interventions. So we can only use our reserve force for deployments. The current HR strength is insufficient to contribute to all national imperatives of governments to reduce the prevalent crime and corruption and fraud within the DoD. Insufficient compensation of employees' budgets made it difficult for us to rejuvenate the MP division to its full complement. And the structural deficiencies that is affecting our performance. The MPD has a dual responsibility to the SANDF to support both joint JFP requirements and to do normal crime prevention and investigation of crime. Next one. The current structure, as I said, has got 44 military police structures, of which only 9 of them can perform 24-hour duties, which means now, because of their capacity, they cannot be there and rotate to do that. The services that are provided are more or less to 1,500 or 600, I mean 6,000 clients with only 6 MP posts at the MP detachments and the MP smaller unit with only 12. The MP division has sufficient support structures, insufficient to address the higher HQ support requirements. And the next slide, the fourth one, is just to show how many MP officials we are using for operations. And of note is that there is insufficient operating budget to procure prime mission equipment. And we've got the aging of our vehicle and motorcycle fleets. Next one. As I said, the other problem is on our armored protected vehicles during operations. We have a shortage of that. And most of our facilities are dilapidated and do not meet OH standards. There is insufficient detention barracks to accommodate the increased number of inmates, more especially that we have to travel for that to Wynberg or to Bloemfontein for that. The complex environment in which we operate requires various specialist capabilities such as forensic, canine, investigation of priority crimes, sexual offense branch, to be established within the MPD in order to address the challenges. But due to funding, we are not able to do that. The insufficient budget doesn't allow us to develop in terms of technology and the procurement of disciplines of crime prevention and investigation. Next. Having said that, there is work that has been done to try and address the problems that we have. The military police support in fighting fraud and corruption in the public and private sector, especially procurement of fraud as instructed by the military Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. We are continuing to work in terms of PROSPER externally on OPS MISTRAL for border safeguarding on OP Corona and the other OP Corona PROSPER assisting the SAPS and other stakeholders. We moved into OP Vigela as well in terms of supporting the JF requirements in Mozambique. In conclusion, Chair,
although empowered, the PMG lacks the capacity and resources to deliver on its mandates to provide a policy, full complement military police capability to the DOD. This threat has been indicated on various forums in to identify the shortcomings in its organizational structure, mainly due to lack of rank-appropriate appointments, specialized investigators, crime prevention personnel, non-existent of administration support staff elements at level 2, 3, and 4, as well as the need for additional line functionaries for deployment to joint operations. The success of the intervention that we require upon the PMG being capacitated with necessary structure and resources and to be supported by active participation of all role players at all levels is a requirement. Through these efforts, every member of the DOT must be made to realize that consequences of losses, continuance, and willing to participate in anti-criminality processes is required in order to achieve the desired end results. That is all that I have to present, Chair. And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Admiral, for this brief and straight to the point presentation. Much appreciated. Colleagues, the matter is on the table. He was able to do it within the allocated time. Again, colleagues, I'm disadvantaged. I cannot be able to see who has raised his hand. Let me just check. So the chief of staff will indicate when he wants to make an input. Maybe let me check if he wants to make an input now or before
not
I take
this moment. Not at this moment.
Not at this moment, chief of staff. Okay.
Thank you
very much. All right, colleagues. Again, let me please announce your name.
Motapo.
Motapo. Right.
Thank you very much, Chair.
All right, sorry, can I take the names first? And can I get number 2?
All right.
Who's number 2? Colleagues, is this the only person who speak on this item?
That's true, Chair.
And Seko Mafanya.
Okay. No, I'm saying that is true. That's the only person that is going to speak, sir.
Oh, that's the only person that's going to speak on this item. All right.
Indeed, thanks.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Ms. Motapo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and colleagues and officials. Let me start by appreciating the presentation by the presenter. I'm afraid to mention the name because I may not say the correct title, Chairperson. And I'm also a bit worried because the military police division is faced with a lot of challenges, Chairperson. And what I would like to comment on is the, as of now, because he made mention of lack of expertise in complex cases to investigate. So as of now, presently, What mechanism is in place to ensure that they are attending to those very, very complex cases in which they are lacking expertise? That's my only comment, Chairperson, and question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have two questions, Admiral. One, you said that the military police has the same powers and duties as SAPS. My question is, does IPED have any jurisdiction over the military police? Two, the provost marshal, the adjutant general said that the military lawyers are also expected to do normal duties. And I quote him, in order to remain relevant. It means that as soldiers, right? And are the military police also expected to do military duties as well? In addition to being police, we're talking about, you know, the other the ordinary duties. And we note the fact that you say there are issues of capacity within the police force. And in his presentation, the adjutant general said most most wrongdoing is picked up by either the IG, Inspector General, the SIU, or the AG of South Africa's office, Auditor General's office, in their report. To the chief, of course, to the chief of the South African Defence Force, and or the SADF. And then you say, then he says that, but unless somebody has reported the matter, has registered the matter with the police, the report remains a report, and you see, and the matter would not reach the what you call the prosecution stage, because it ended, it was reported. The report was sent to the chief of staff, sorry, the chief of the South African Defence Force and or the SADF, but was never progressed further, you know, to be reported if there are criminal, offences arising out of it. It's never progressed further to the military police, who must then look, investigate the matter further, and when they think that they are ready, they present it to the prosecutor, who, when the case is prosecution ready, he presents it, he or she presents it to court. So you are part of that chain. But now, when you report so much challenges, you know, what must we, what level of satisfaction must we have that the matters that are reported as constituting, you know, serious cases will ever see a prosecution or will ever see the light of day in court? You see, that's where the issue is that I'm actually concerned about. That unless we capacitate this very important, you know, arm within the unit, we'll end up with all the cases that are potentially that should potentially end before court, not ending before our court, before the courts, because of the serious weaknesses within your division. You may want to comment on that. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the questions and the answer. First to Honorable Ntapo. When we raised the issue of the lack of expertise in specialized crimes and what mechanisms are applied to address this matter, I think we have reported in this that we've got joint ventures with our sister organizations like the SAPS, where we see that the case is much above the specialized components of the military police. First, we arranged a meeting with them, and this is like an ongoing meetings that we have, that we address all our challenges on a monthly basis, where they then offer their support. And most of these cases then are referred to the HOGS, where we build teams for them to at least capacitate our members in terms of the experience and the knowledge on how this is done. But most of these cases then are referred to them for further investigations. Although I must say that due to their a lot of work that they have, most of the times we have to go back to request that they give them more priority. But in that has been, I mean, on that matter is that as well, we sent our specialized investigators to do now your commercial crimes courses, where now at least some of them get to have this expertise due to the training that they get there. So we are trying to address it, even if we don't have much of these funds to do that. But they are not making us pay for the specialized courses. And when they are doing our cases, we are happy that they are at least addressing the matters that we have. And these cases end up in court, but some of them take long. The first one from yourself, Chairperson, thank you very much. As I said, in terms of Section 31(2)(a), the military police has got the same powers as that of the SAPS. But as far as DOD property and personnel is concerned, so we've got our own internal investigation that addresses cases that are against military police. So IP doesn't have any jurisdiction on the military police. I am sorry I missed the presentation comments by the Adjutant General, but when you asked that can the military police do any other duties besides that of police work, as we said, we're wearing two caps. One is that we are soldiers, where military has to deploy. First, we do escorts, which is not is a escort of convoys, which is an operational field where we do. And when we deploy in the borders, we do military police tasking on our soldiers. If there's wrongdoing from our soldiers, we are policing them on the borders and when they are deployed externally. So the other duties that we find them doing is where there's military police units, they do their own protection and guarding. Whilst they do that, and they do normal duties of a soldier in protecting their bases and camps. But they don't do any other duties like guarding wherever they require to guard a normal SADF unit. They guard their own. And when we are at the operational site, they do VIP post protection for dignitaries that visit those military camps that are deploying. And the third one, and I think you have elaborated on the when wrongdoing is picked up by IG, SIU, and ADSA, and the cases are sent to SECDEF and the chief, and when it was said that these cases sometimes do not end up in the hands of the police and may not, for that matter, end up in the...
Sorry, Ms. Motapo, can you mute your mic? Thanks. Over to my apologies, General Admiral.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. After the consideration by the chief and the SECDEF on the findings, the recommendations of most of the cases is telling us what to do, either to forward these cases due to their complexity to the NPA, for them to then we look at these cases, we've got a relationship with them as well, so that then we can have teams or we can have cases referred to the Hawks. Some of these cases have done between the NPA, the Hawks, the SANDF, the Adjutant General's environment, and the PMG. And where we must then consider or on the recommendations, disciplinary actions to be taken, the chief will then, or the SECDEF, instructs a chief of service and divisions where the members are said to be to implement disciplinary action. So it doesn't lie, and we don't have this. And the chief and the SECDEF then will wait for the chief of service and division to apply those or implement the disciplinary action, and they will report back to the chief. And this is where we report. So a lot of these cases, unless there's one or two that nothing has been done, but I do not have any idea of what those are, but I'll talk to the adjutant general if those are in his environment. Chairperson, I think I've tried to cover the concerns and questions that you raised.
No, you have. You've done it so well, Admiral. Let me thank you for your presentation. I don't know if there is any winding up comment on your side before we move off to the next item. Any concluding remark from the SNDF team, colleagues? All right. It doesn't look like there's any concluding remark. No, thank you very much for.
If I may, Chair. Sorry.
Yes, Chief of Staff, over to you, sir.
There's a question that I think was your concern as to the other duties that are being done by the military police, as to say, do they do real military duties? I just will give you one example. I think about 2 years. A very major battle in Syria was mainly fought with the Russian military police brigade, because they must protect their own facilities. Reinforcement might come 2 or 3 days after. So they train like real military. That's why they've got paratroopers. There were some who have been the special force as well, but they will remain military police under the PMG in terms of operations. They are soldiers first and police second. Okay. I just wanted to explain that. And they need to be equipped as such. Mm. That's why you spoke of mechanized, unavailable protection. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, General. I think you've made the point much clearer. Thank you very much for this addition. Colleagues, I think we now have gotten the picture of the whole value chain tonight. So we wish to thank the Chief of Staff and the Admiral. And then say, I think we're safe now that we can move to the next item. So, Chief and of Staff, as well as the Admiral, you are free to exit the platform at any time when you wish so. We now move to the next item, is the report on the on our budget vote discussion.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Admiral. All right, colleagues, quickly, let's do the reporting. Brian, how is the reporting is structured, and the presentation structured?
Chair, I think the first presentation will be done by Dr. Van Rensburg, then the second one by Peter on the two reports.
Okay, in that order, Doc, over to you, sir.
Good morning, Chair, and all the members. I just want to confirm whether you can see the screen on your side.
Yes, I can see the screen, Doc.
Right. Chair, in the interest of time, this report was, there's a two parts to the report, two reports. The first one is dealing with defense and the two entities, Arms Corps and the Castle Control Board. And myself and Peter will take you through this, and then we'll go to the second report, which is just on the Department of Military Veterans. These reports were sent to members a few days ago when it was finalized. So in the interest of time, I will just go through the main headings and then focus on the observations and recommendations that stems from the committee's engagement with these items. So the report is divided into three parts. Part A, dealing with the Department of Defense. And here we looked at the mandate of the Department of Defense and the previous year's committee report and the recommendations that this committee made as a backdrop to this report. Then we moved into this year, looking at the annual performance plan of the Department of Defense in terms of its mandates, policies, in terms of its strategic focus areas, and its updated 22 situational analysis, where it looks, for example, at your environmental, external environmental analysis, also your internal environmental analysis. And these were mostly taken from the annual performance plan of the department. Getting to the nuts and bolts of it, we're looking at the Department of Defense performance. Here, looking at how the department's performance plans relate to the broader government performance plans, such as the NDP, the MTSF, and also how it fits in with the State of the Nation address delivered by the president. There's also a summary of the ministerial priorities and focus areas, the sector's focus areas, and the chief of the SANDF's focus areas. Coming to the year in question, before we got to the year in question, there was a brief overview of the previous financial year and the key issues that came out of the previous financial year, and then we move on to the 2022-23 DoD budget analysis. And this analysis relates to the annual performance plan and the budget of the department that was given to members previously and that members engaged with during the meeting with the department. So it follows, provides a broad overview of the defense budget, what the key cost drivers are for the department, and then looking at previous recommendations that National Treasury also made to this committee in relation to the budget. It then goes into details of each of the eight programs of defense. Program one is administration, and it looks at the budget and the performance of that is planned for the year by the department. Similar for Project 2, Force Employment, you look at the budget and the planned performance targets. But Program 3, Landward Defense, again, your budget and your performance areas. And most of these programs only have one or two targets. Program 4, Air Defense, looking at your budget and the changes in the programs, and then specifically at your performance indicators as well. Similarly for Program 5, Maritime Defense, budget, performance planning, Program 6, military health support, again, your budget, and your performance areas, similar for defense intelligence, budget performance areas, and finally, Program 8, which is general support. We're looking at your budget and your performance areas that are planned. So, Chair and members, those are the overview of the key issues discussed. It's all taken from the official documentation of the department in their annual performance plan and from the National Treasury in their estimates of national expenditure. What we did then in the next paragraph, similar to previous years, is draft the observations by the committee. So these are relate to the broad and important aspects that members discussed on the 4th of May with the Department of Defense after they presented, after they made their presentation. I'll go through these. Firstly, members noted the need for the DoD to take to heart the matters raised by the Auditor General of South Africa, but expressed understanding that some AG findings are multi-year findings that take time to resolve. Second, members expressed concern around the fact that the DoD will have to do major reprioritization within the 2022-23 budget, given the need to address expected overexpenditure on compensation of employees and funding reprioritization required for the SANF's unplanned deployments, such as Operation Chariot in response to KwaZulu-Natal flooding and in the Eastern Cape. Next, the committee reiterated its concerns around the lack of capital acquisition in the DoD and the long-term impact that this will have on the operational capacity of the SANDF. Fourth, members expressed the need for an urgent conclusion to the ongoing impasse around Project Hoefeister, which is the acquisition of the SA Army's infantry fighting vehicles, the Badger. Next, members noted concern around Project Tusano and its associated costs, especially in the context of the AG's findings in this regard. Next, the committee also highlighted the potential income that can be generated from the DoD, for the DoD from the sale of obsolete equipment and the need for the DoD to consider enhancing this process. Members expressed concern around the rising cost of advertising in the DoD amidst fiscal constraints, given the significant growth in this line item as a percentage of DoD spending allocation in recent years. Next, members also questioned the increase in the cost of operating leases as a percentage of the DoD allocation and was specifically concerned around the need for expenses related to new and unplanned leases. Next, members noted concerns around the upgrading of DoD facilities as observed and experienced by members during oversight visits. The committee also noted the observation by the DoD that it plans to reduce the number of procurement centers from the current 73 by consolidating some of the smaller centers. Members also noted the need for fully functional defense enterprise management systems for the for effective management of all procurement centers and the broader business continuity of the DoD. The committee further noted the need for the audit of the procurement centers to be sped up, as this was concerned. It was also noted by the AG in the status of records review. The second last one there is members expressed concern around the slow progress in relation to investigations of irregular fruitless and wasteful expenditure, with a very limited number of investigations being finalized. The view was that the DoD is therefore failing to take appropriate consequence management steps and efforts to recover funds for the department. Lastly, members also noted the continued disputes around material irregularities and expressed the need for this to be finalized. But Chair and members, these are the main points raised by yourselves as members during the day, and based on these inputs that you provided, we recommend the following recommendations on behalf of the committee based on the inputs that you as members made on the day. So going through the list of proposed recommendations, firstly, the DoD and National Treasury should urgently engage around the funding requirements for unplanned SANDF deployments that were not budgeted for in the 2022-23 main allocation. And this would, for example, relate to your project Chariot, Operation Chariot, that was not provided for in the main budget for the year. This additional allocation should be clearly reflected in a mid-year adjusted budget. So if they do allocate extra funds for this, it should be indicated in the mid-year budget and it will allow the committee to track this. Second, while the committee welcomes the various interventions to bring over expenditure on COE under control over the medium term, it stresses the need for effective implementation. The DoD should, as part of its quarterly reports to Parliament, indicate progress in the implementation of COE interventions, adherence to the implementation schedule, and the estimated savings. The committee further encourages both the DoD and National Treasury to work together to find means to speed up the process of stabilizing the COE expenditure in the department. Third, the lack of capital expenditure by the DoD remains a concern. While aware of broader fiscal constraints, meaning in the country, the committee encourages renewed engagements between the DoD and National Treasury around the potential funding of key strategic capabilities that require urgent capital intervention for acquisition and maintenance. This refers specifically to cases where strategic capabilities may be lost as a result of non-funding, or where a lack of short-term funding may result in significant investment requirements over the long term. The outcome of such engagement should be reflected by the DoD and National Treasury in the mid-year adjusted budget. Next, during its recent oversight visit to the Nell and Arms Corps facilities, the committee expressed the urgent need for a final decision on Project Hoofleister. In line with the recommendations made by the head of the delegation during the oversight visit, the committee recommends engagement between Arms Corps, Denel, and the DoD on the future of the project. Arms Corps should report back to the committee in writing, not later than 21 July 2022, on the outcome of such engagements and the way forward for Project Hoofleister. The date there, chairman members, was the date that was agreed on by the delegation during the oversight visit. Next, the committee undertakes to have further in-depth discussions with the DoD and the AG around Project Tusanu and will make subsequent recommendations on the way forward. This is due to the fact that there are discussions scheduled for the committee around Project Tusanu. Next, the committee recommends that the DoD and Arms Corps jointly develop a plan to speed up plans to generate revenue through the sale of obsolete equipment. The DoD and Arms Corps should report progress on this plan to the committee during deliberations on the adjusted budget for 2022, including how projected revenue will be spent. Next, the committee encourages the DoD to optimize its spending and identify areas for potential savings, especially as it relates to expenditure on 1) advertising and 2) operating leases, specifically new and unplanned leases. The DoD should provide the committee with a detailed breakdown of all leases for 2022-23 by 21 July 2022 for further monitoring. Chair and members, if we receive a list like this, it will allow the committee to go a bit more into detail and see if there's a need for further engagement on this, given that it was an issue that was highlighted during the engagement on the budget. Next, the DoD should provide quarterly feedback on progress related to the consolidation of its 73 procurement centers. Second last, the DoD should provide quarterly feedback on efforts to acquire and implement a new integrated defense enterprise system, given that this was identified as a priority by the department. And lastly, the committee urges the sector and the chief SANEF to urgently speed up the investigations of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure and enhance consequent management in this regard. The committee also undertakes to have further engagements with the DoD on these investigations. So, Chair, those were the observations and recommendations that flowed from it for the Department of Defense. I will hand over to Peter to take you through the next section dealing with the Castle Control Board before we get to Arms Corps there.
Good morning, Chair members. The two entities will now be covered. The first one is the Castle Control Board. And as you can see there on page 24, it is just basically a deduction. And then we discuss the COVID-19 pandemic. And the chairperson forward, members would know that the impact, the devastating impact that the COVID had on tourism. There on the next slide, we just, on the next page is just the annual performance plan, and then we covered the various parts. Part A was the mandate, be the strategic focus. Then we move over there to the situational analysis. And there, on the next page, we're looking there at how we measured their performance. And then there, we started discussing their programs, first program, one, administration, and then the targets that they've set for themselves. Then program two, maintenance and conservation, their targets that they set for the year, the annual targets as well, the quarterly targets. And then we moved over to program three, maximizing the tourism potential. Program four, we increased their public access. And then next we moved to their program resource consideration, just the kind of funding that it has been received, will be receiving for this financial year. There is just the programs in terms of nominal and real increases. And next day there's the programs. We just look at the percentage of each program vis-a-vis their total budget. And then we discussed program one and just noted where the main issues were with regards to their financing there. Program two, program three, and program four. And then next, we just looked at the enterprise risk management, where they listed the outcome that they wanted, the key risks, as well as the mitigating effects or mitigating strategies. But here, then the important part is there at the bottom of that page, I think it's page 31, there we started listing the observations of the committee. Firstly, we said there the committee inquired about the loss of personnel, especially since the advent of COVID, and wanted to be assured that these members left due to a better opportunity, due to better opportunities rather than leaving due to cost-saving measures. This against the background that the CCB refers to insufficient human resources capacity as one of its risks. The committee was assured that only three members left, two due to relocation and a better working opportunity, and the other due to a disciplinary matter which still needs to be concluded. The next observation was that there were challenges with the appointment and the continued utilization of interns, and concern was expressed given the country's challenge with youth unemployment. The third observation was that while the committee supports the CCB in the execution of the mandate and especially preserve such a historical site, it noted the continued reliance on the DoD to assist it with funding and to remain a going concern. The next one related to the key risk and mitigating factors, and there are attempts to mitigate it. However, the fact that the mitigating factors have not been updated was noted as a concern. There, I'm just mentioning two of the examples. For instance, the first one related to the retention of historical surpluses, and for the last 2 years, you know, those funds were not available anymore as it already been depleted. The next one, they refer to a newly appointed executive director and a CFO, and they've been in the post for at least nine years, Chair. The next one, the committee noted the continued challenge of people putting up temporary structures on the perimeter of the castle and the attempts by the City of Cape Town, the Metro Police and the Military Police to assist to address the situation. Members were informed of a delay with the finalization of a fence installation by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Based on those observations, Chair, we then made the following five recommendations. First, the committee encouraged the Castle GCB to ensure that a human resources plan includes a viable retention strategy to facilitate the continued employment of the employees despite cost pressures, to prevent employees from exiting due to internal matters. The second one, the CCB should pay specific attention to the appointment and utilization of interns due to the many benefits of such a system to assist to address youth unemployment in the country. Thirdly, it was recommended that the CCB should review its revenue optimization strategy in line with the current restricted financial environment to assist with increase its revenue and to remain a going concern, given that these circumstances are likely to persist in the immediate and short term. Fourthly, the committee recommends that the CCB updates its key risks and especially the mitigating strategies as a matter of urgency. And the fifth one is that the committee recommends that the CCB should conduct its engagement, with stakeholders to address the people who erect temporary structures on its perimeter within the confines of the law and with a necessary humane and compassionate approach. Thank you, Chair. That's the observations and recommendations for the Castle Control Board. William?
Thank you, Peter. Chair, I'll continue to the last section of this report, which is the Armaments Corporation of South Africa, ArmsCorp. Again, we took a broad overview of this, looking at the mandate of ArmsCorp, the main objectives of ArmsCorp, and then at its strategic focus areas, which includes notes from the introductory statement, which was the board chairperson and the minister's statements. Also, we looked at the corporate plan for ArmsCorp, which includes their environmental scan, looking at the external environment, internal environment that affects ArmsCorp. And then again, how ArmsCorp contributes to national government planning in terms of its contributions to the NDP and the MTSF. Moving to the year under question now for the corporate report 2022-23, we looked at the budget analysis, an overview of income and expenditure. Those are the main items of income and expenditure. We looked at how ArmsCorp is funded. It's in terms of the transfer it receives and the sales it makes and other forms of income. We also looked at additional financial information. Those are just the broad expenditures and financial planning for the group. And then a bit more in detail in terms of their economic classifications, the type of things that they are planning to spend money on during the year. We also looked at the National Treasury's breakdown of how ArmsCorp plans to spend its funds for the year, and here we indicated various programs and the nominal and real increases for this. Another matter that's been of priority for ArmsCorp is the issue around sweating of assets, and we quickly looked at that and the concerns in those regard that comes from the corporate plan. Also looked at the corporate plan's personnel information for ArmsCorp, including the dockyard and the various institutions within ArmsCorp. Lastly, importantly, is the selected performance indicators for ArmsCorp and what they plan to achieve within the year against their set targets. Similar to this is also the strategic outputs for ArmsCorp and funding that's related to that. Based on the engagements that the members had with ArmsCorp on the 4th of May, the following observations were captured. Firstly, while acknowledging that ArmsCorp is only the contracting agent, members expressed concern around ArmsCorp's indication that no work will be done on the SA Navy frigates in 2022 and 23, specifically given the urgent need for midlife upgrades of these vessels. Second, members raised questions around the ability of service providers such as the NAL to take over maintenance work of the SANDF equipment, such as those being done by Project Tusano, and expressed concern around the indication by ArmsCorp that such a shift would not be possible. Members again expressed frustration around the lack of a final decision on Project Ufaster and the impact this has not only on ArmsCorp as the contract managing agent, but also on the SANDF's long-term strategic planning. Members welcome the input by ArmsCorp that it forms part of an ongoing discussion with the DoD around budgetary reprioritization. I think there was a big discussion about that positive development. Members also noted the renewed focus by ArmsCorp to pay service providers within 50 days. Members expressed the need for ArmsCorp to engage more urgently with the findings of the Auditor General and heed the findings contained in the management letters. And lastly, members encourage ArmsCorp to seek partnerships with the private sector, government departments, and state-owned enterprises to make its services, to market its services, and expand cooperation. This can be of specific value given the reduced defense allocation and impact that this has on ArmsCorp's fiscal position. In this regard, members also noted the observation by ArmsCorp in its corporate plan that the sweating of its own assets, sourcing contracts from foreign governments and intellectual property exploitation are taking longer than expected. So based on these observations, Chair and members, the following recommendations can be considered. Firstly, OMSCOR should provide the committee with a long-term cost projection of the midlife upgrades of the SA Navy frigates and submarines. The information should include calculations on the expected cost escalations brought about by delays in performing the midlife upgrades. OMSCOR should submit these to the committee by 21 July, as it will allow the committee to engage DOD and National Treasury on the matter. Chair, this recommendation is based on the ongoing and frequent reference by this committee to the issue around the midlife upgrades. And by including this recommendation, it will allow the committee to obtain important cost information to see the long-term cost trends of this issue. And I think that will allow the committee to have more informed discussions with the DOD and National Treasury on the long-term need for midlife upgrades of these vessels. Secondly, during its recent oversight visit to Danel and OMSCOR facilities, the committee expressed an urgent need for the final decision on Project Hoofeister. In line with the recommendation made by the head of the delegation during the oversight visit, the committee recommends urgent engagements between OMSCOR, Danel and the SANDF on the future of the project. OMSCOR should report back to the committee in writing not later than 21 July. Recommendation is a repeat that was made in the Department of Defense recommendations in the same report, but it's important to highlight it to all the stakeholders. The third one there, OMSCOR should include a target around the payment of its service providers within 30 days in its annual report for 2022-23. This is because there is currently no set target around this aspect in its annual performance plan, so the committee can request that they include it at the end of the year in their annual report. OMSCOR is encouraged to have regular engagement with the Auditor General and address its audit findings with the urgency it deserves. Lastly, OMSCOR should provide the committee with a written explanation by 21 June of the following. Reasons for the delays in the planned sweating of OMSCOR assets and plans to address this in the upcoming year. Reasons for the difficulty in sourcing contracts from foreign investors and plans to address this in the coming year, and reasons for slow exploitation of intellectual property and plans to address this in the coming year. This all relates to problems that OMSCOR had in the past to boost its income, and it would be good for the committee to have this information so that it can be properly tracked in the committee's oversight role over the next year. Chair, members, that concludes this draft report. I'll be guided by you, Chair, if we should spend time on this report first and see if there's any changes or additional input from members before we go to the DMV report, or would you like us to go through the DMV report as well first?
I prefer that we deal with this and conclude the discussion on it before we move to the next one. Colleagues, let's deal with this. You'll indicate whether you want to comment on the DOD, CCB, or AMSCO part of the report. All right, Mr. Mora, I can see you want to say something.
Yes, I first of all want to compliment both Bilalem and Peter again with outstanding reports. And there's just And I mean, the quality is just mind-boggling, so we are indebted to them. There are two matters that I've identified. The one matter is addressed in the OMSCOR report. That is about the midlife upgrades and the calculations. We know that that'll be probably a 2-3 year spread to do those three frigates and the three submarines. But it's very, very important that we get that. So I was wondering whether that must come into the DOD report as well, given that that is so important for us, so that these two can just talk to each other in terms of that. That was my one point. And the other one is something that was mentioned a number of times, and even this morning we have seen it in the presentations on the legal side, and that is the cyber, the whole use, the studies and the use and the cost of cyber technology, satellite technology, UAVs, drones, etc., as a force multiplier. We know that that is probably a medium term, a forecast that we will do, but somewhere we must start with that information so that we know, and Arms Corps is probably the right one to do that study, and because we know that South African defense industry companies do have that technology. They do export that technology at the moment. And if we see what's happening in the rest of the world, then we know that somehow we have to look at that. Whether we can fund that at this stage is a different story, but at least let me start with the preparatory works so that they can report to us in due course. So those are the only two matters. Otherwise, excellent reports, in my opinion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murray. Any other comment, colleagues?
Motapo,
over to you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start by following my colleague by thanking Manco for this report. Chairperson, with your guidance and that of the WIP, please assist me. Where do we locate Special Forces School in this regard? Pardon my ignorance, Chairperson. Thank you.
Right. Special Forces School would be, there is a program. I can't remember. It's a sub program, I think. Let's go back to that sub program. Do you recall in sub program 3, the allocation is about a billion rand? Oh, it's down, it's 967 down from a billion rand. You wanted to say something on this, Ms. Motapo?
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Am I audible, Chairperson?
Yes, you are.
Yes, Chairperson. Once more, pardon my ignorance. Chairperson, I don't know because that report, we had an oversight visit to the Special Forces School. So, but as a committee, I can't recall us dealing with that report. So how and when are we then supposed to raise the observations which we the observations made at during our oversight visit? That's why I say your guidance in this regard, because I think this is the budget for this financial year.
Correct.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I think she is right. I know that you have produced a report on the oversight visit, but I think I agree with her that we can lift an aspect that relates to budget and then put it in this report. I don't know what exactly was said on the issue, but I think it makes sense that we are dealing with this. Let's record the observation that you made when you were on the ground, and then the issue, and then of budget as part of recommendations. It was around the reduction, eh?
Yes, Chair, I think that was the main issue. Yeah, I'll include that observation and structure.
And make the recommendations as well.
Yes, and I think the more in-depth aspects of that was captured in the oversight visit report, which we did distribute to members, but I think, if I recall, Brian can correct me if I'm wrong, but we haven't adopted it as a committee yet.
Oh, yes, you are right. But we can lift a part of it into this. But that speaks directly, in other words, in a summary form, that speaks directly to the issue of underfunding of the of that operation. In other words, we must observe its importance. I don't know how you couched it. Critical importance, I don't know, within the, I don't know, you'll see how you look at it. All right, and the need for additional funding. And it's a pity that it's what we see is a reverse, a reduction from the previous year's financial year, which is not a good sign. All right, does that cover you, Ms. Motapo?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I'm covered. Thank you, sir.
All right. All right, any other? All right. Okay, I think I'm happy with this. Let me thank you, colleagues, for this. So, look, you've done so well that we don't have to make any major changes to the report as you have presented it. You've captured the issue so well. All right, let's pass and then move to the next report. Are you happy with this, both Doc and Peter?
Chair, from my side, I'm happy. I will include those changes that were recommended now and just double-check the report for any additional small mistakes there might be or so forth. But from my side, I will include those changes, then we're good to go.
There are no additions to CCP. I think it's accepted as presented. All right. So let's move to DMV. Thank you very much, colleagues.
Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to Peter.
Peter, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. And once again, thank you, members. Chair, there is the is it clear, Chair?
Not yet. It's coming, though.
Now, Chair?
I started screening sharing, but it's not on the screen as yet. Unless the problem is on this side. Can you see it, colleagues?
Yeah, well.
No, nothing.
Nothing so far?
Yes.
Now, because on my side, it shows that it's sharing. Can you just try again, Chair?
Maybe remove and redo it. Yeah, now it's on the screen. Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. As with the DOD report, I'll just briefly go through what we've covered previously in our presentations to the committee. First, there in this report is just the introduction, what is the mandate of the committee, and then what process we followed. And then specifically from the APP, just a forward by the minister and the deputy minister, various issues that they have raised. Next, we looked at their mandate, the objectives, and their contributions, and what are their main objectives. We looked at guidelines from the State of the Nation Address, the NDP, and the Medium-Term Strategic Framework, as well as the Executive Authorities' priorities. The next issue, Chair, is just the committee's previous budget report from financial year 2021-22, and then the recommendations that we've made there. The next section, Section 5, just deal with the annual performance plan. Again, their mandate, the strategic focus, the situational analysis, both internal and external. And then we look how they actually measuring their performance. Point 6 is just the DMV's programs for the financial year 22-23. Then an overview of that, the budget summary. And there we can see also the percentage increases and decreases in nominal and real terms. And then we looked at the various programs, Program 1, Administration, this is purpose and as well as its targets, the budgetary allocation, similar done with Program 2, socioeconomic support, the purpose, the performance targets, the budgetary allocation, same done with Program 3, Empowerment and Stakeholder Management, purpose and performance targets, the budgetary allocation. And then we looked at the human resources, how that have changed, and then we looked at the key risks and mitigations. See, from page What is page 11? There are the observations from the committee. Our first share is that one of the main concerns expressed by the committee is the access by military veterans and dependents to the benefits as outlined in Section 5 of the Military Veterans Act. As the department plans to decentralize some of its functions through provincial offices, the committee inquired about the functioning and especially capacitation of these offices. The DMV then responded that they have only two offices that are not fully functional, but that they are in the process of capacitating and resourcing these offices. The second observation was that the committee was concerned about the vacancies, especially at senior management level, and in particular, the lengthy period it takes to fill this position. The department agreed with this assertion and admit that they have a high turnaround of personnel, where people sometimes stay just for a few months. They plan to host a team-building session to try and address the situation and improve how the various employees relate to one another. Observation 3 is that the AG expressed concern on how the department manages movable assets, and the committee inquired about the progress to address the concerns and whether there are any challenges in this regard. They responded that there's an external a service provider is assisting them, and it also established an internal asset verification team, but the human resource capacity actually hampers them to speedily clear these queries. Next one, members expressed concern around the rollout of the pension, as we have previously indicated that it commenced in April 2022, as well as whether as this has been properly budgeted for and the quantum that can be expected. It was explained that the principal monthly amount of 4,952 has been determined, and this will be linked to the annual adjustment as announced by the minister. 5 deals with consequent mention, especially with regards to implicated officials. As it was noted, it's a crucial aspect of good governance, and in this regard, questions were raised around the continued suspension of especially the 4 senior officials. The response was that this is being addressed, and that they are hopeful it will be concluded in the near future. The next issue related to the lack of capacity in internal audit, and that the internal audit function is the acting CFO, and especially whether this issue is being addressed with the urgency it deserves. It was pointed out that this issue is being addressed, and that they agreed to the potential conflict of interest as a concern, but they say that this person will then not directly move back to the internal audit, but will go to another function, so-called cool-off period about a year to address this concern. The committee found it problematic that the department reduces targets due to various reasons, but do not inform the committee what the consequences and the impact are on the beneficiaries, especially since it's clear that the beneficiaries are still in dire need of these benefits. Clarification was sought around the funding of especially school and higher education students, the different kinds of funding between public and private institutions, and how it is ensured that students referred by the DMV to NSFAS are effectively being taken care of. They indicated that while they are different, they indicated the different amounts paid to the different institutions, but they acknowledged they were backlogged in the payment to NSFAS, but stressed that they are in the process of addressing it. 9, members raised questions around the capacity of DMV to look after the needs of learners and children of military veterans with special needs. It was indicated that these learners and children are provided for, and where applicable, increased payments are facilitated through the accounting officer's approval. 10, the committee noted the concerns raised by the accounting officer regarding the department's interaction with the department executive authority in relation to concurrence between the two parties. In relation to the district development model, concern was expressed that the department is not very clear about its role and plans in this regard, and in particular, how to engage municipalities, as such plans need to manifest clearly in the relevant integrated development plans of municipalities. 12, questions were raised around the applications of the means test, as this is a statutory requirement to deliver benefits to military veterans. The response was that military veteran organizations have objected to its implementation, and it is currently not being implemented, but will be addressed in the amendment bill. The last one there, the concern was expressed about the role of the presidential task team on military veterans, as it appears as if the department tends to, on it to do it, to their work, and address the relevant challenges. It acknowledges that there are challenges or weaknesses in the institution of the task team, but the department felt it does not mean that they are abdicating their responsibilities, as the task team only assists to address challenges in particular related to the whole government approach and specifically in the intergovernmental relations environment. Okay. Then, based on those observations, the recommendations are, one, the committee recommending, as in the past, that the DMV should speed up the capacitation and resourcing of all provincial officers during this financial year, as it has been informed of such attempts for the last 5 years. In addition, it should report on all leases at the next quarterly engagement with the committee. Members are aware of the challenges that we encountered with regards to the leases of buildings, especially the headquarters. Second, it is recommended that DMV interrogate the organizational culture during team building sessions to address some of the reasons why recently appointed personnel, in some cases, leave soon after the appointment. The department should indicate to the committee whether its human resources plan has an retention strategy and especially how well it's being implemented if it's in place at the next quarterly meeting. The committee recommends that the department prioritize the verification of its movable assets to address the audit query, as this will also allow them to ensure that all these assets are properly accounted for and not open to abuse. The next one, the determination of the monthly quantum for the pensions was welcome, and the committee encouraged the department to move speedily to roll out this benefit based on the dire situation of many military veterans. Number five, it is recommended that against the background of the already restricted human resources capacity and the continued number of vacancies, at especially senior management level, that the suspension of the four officials should be addressed as a matter of urgency. This because the department previously justified its poor performance and underspending and the lack of sufficient HR capacity. Quarterly feedback and the resolution of the suspensions and the filling of vacancies should be provided. Number six, the committee again urged the department to address the challenges in the internal audit division as soon as possible, given its crucial role in being an early warning system as well as assisting with good governance. Number seven, it was stressed that the department should endeavor to deliver benefits as humanely and efficiently as possible, as the lack thereof may in some cases be a matter of life and death for certain of these beneficiaries who are due to their age in dire straits. Number eight, the committee recommended that the DMV should clear the backlog payments to NSFAS as soon as possible, as some of these date back as far as 2018, to ensure that students are accommodated and not being penalized due to system problems between the DMV and NSFAS. The department should provide a progress report in this regard at the next quarterly meeting with the committee. The next one, the committee expressed its appreciation for the manner in which the DMV reported that they are assisting children of military veterans with special needs and encouraged them to continue ensuring that their needs are provided for. Number 10, the committee advised that the executive authority and the department should address the issue of concurrence and ensure that they are in agreement before they engage the committee. The next one, the department was advised to properly engage municipalities with regards to the district development model to ensure that the needs of military veterans are optimally catered and provided for at this level of government. Number 12, given that the main stress has been put on hold, the committee advised that the department speed up the finalization of the amendment bill to ensure that benefits are more efficiently delivered to military veterans. The last one, while appreciating the work and progress made by the representative targeting our military veterans, the committee encouraged the department to utilize this opportunity to its fullest to solicit the continued support of other departments, provincial and local governments, to ensure that benefits are delivered speedier and effectively. Thank you, Chair.
All right, colleagues, there we are. Again, we thank you, Peter, for the good work. Any comment?
Chairperson?
Yes, Dr. Tellyambe.
Yeah. No, Chairperson, I'm not going to take much of your time. Well, I mean, it's a true representation, and I'm happy with the presentation. The only problem, Chairperson, I have, you know, is the issue of that pension thing. You know, there were concerns that were raised as if, I mean, whether this was budgeted for this current financial year. And also the issue that policies still need to be adopted, if I think, and they still need to be sort of a publication of that amendment. And now also the issue of the budget. Now, I've noticed that, I mean, the Deputy President now has gone out to say members of military veterans can now expect, I mean, to get, I mean, the pension. I'm worried, Chairperson, that what answers will be, but maybe there is a need that it is clarified. I'm fine with the presentation, but I'm concerned about the statement issued already that they must expect their pensions. That expectation is going to make it difficult even for us, I mean, to explain why they are not getting their pension, because their Deputy President has promised. This is not, no, I don't have much, Chairperson, I'm happy with the presentation. If that, I mean, can be looked at, I know we can't put it in here, but it must be addressed, because these recommendations are good, but it is against what, I mean, the President has spoken, Deputy President has spoken to the, I mean, yeah, no, that's all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Chilembe, I agree, but can't we leave that to the in-year monitoring of their budget? And because it doesn't affect, like you are saying, it doesn't affect what is already captured in the report.
Yes, sir.
As a concern, and it's something that we need to pay a particular attention to as we monitor the budget. Agreed?
Okay, no, fine. No, thanks.
Thanks so much. And any other?
Mutapo, Chair.
Mutapo.
Okay, thank you once more, Honorable Chairperson. And let me commend the presenter and management for committee for this well-documented report. According to me, most of the issues we raised as a committee have been captured, especially the high vacancy rate, lack of capacity in internal units. So from my side, I want to commend everyone who participated in this report. And I think if when we move for adoption, I'll be the first to raise my hand, Chairperson. Thank you.
I'll second you. Right. Any other? All right. It doesn't look like we have any other comment. Right. Colleagues, now can we then do the right thing? I present the first report. What vote is that? Vote 23. Budget vote 23. Report, yeah. And any mover? And the seconder? Mr. Mare moves. Seconded by?
Mutapo.
Ms. Mutapo, and then thank you very much. And then the DMV, I think, is vote 24.
Me? 26.
I present vote 24, Ms. Mutapo, and the seconded by? Moved by Ms. Mutapo, seconded by? Seconded by? I don't get the name.
Seconded, Chair.
Seconded by Honorable Mutle. Right. I think that concludes the discussion on the two reports. And Brian, you know what to do after this. So we leave it in your good hands. Can you then? I think we have only one item, Brian, left, but I'm looking at the time. That was the minutes.
That's correct, sir.
And it's one set, Brian.
It's only one set, yes, sir.
Would you die in the trenches if we postpone them to the next meeting?
No, it's fine, sir. It's only one.
Okay. And, okay, I think we've done very well, colleagues. I think can we then, on that note, we can now close the meeting. and thank all of you for your participation and this afternoon. And it remains for me to adjourn the meeting. Is there any objection?
No objection.
Thank you. So the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.